Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the beloved Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And we start with a double shot of good as it comes to the fight over Obamacare and government funding. And we start with West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin. He has said he will not support any effort to defund Obamacare at this point, but he did tell a breakfast sponsored by Bloomberg News that he would support a year-long delay in the individual mandate. Here's what he said.
Individual mandates, delay them for 1 year. Let go ahead and let the exchanges take place. See how many people volunteer that really wanted insurance, needed insurance, and it was their only way to get insurance. But don't put the mandate on the American public right now. Give them at least a year. If you know you couldn't bring the corporate sector, you gave them a year. Don't you think it'd be fair to give the individual mandates?
Did you vote for that?
Yes. There's no way I could not vote for it.
In addition to Manchin, who could be potentially a crack in the wall, there's enough time to forge a different compromise on the continuing resolution. ABC's Jeff Zeleny, in two different clips here, explained to the American people something they might not hear from most other mainstream outlets, Jim, and that's that there's problems with Obamacare.
In Pittsburgh, Dan Howard received a letter saying his policy will be canceled because of the new law. Married with six children, he's struggling to find coverage.
Of course I'm concerned.
The bottom line for millions, many young and healthy will likely pay more, while older and sick Americans get a break, and costs vary widely. A family of four making $50,000 will pay $600 a month in some states, far more in others.
So, Jim, obviously, we don't know how this will turn out, but the fact that there is some movement potentially in some red state Democrats is good news, and the fact that the truth is getting out there in places other than us is also good.
There are a couple big significant things about what Manchin said. One is that he's echoing the Republican critique word for word, which is to say, why is it fair to give companies an exemption from the mandate but not individuals? Why isn't this a matter of rewarding the president and his big business friends and punishing the little guy? And that is a very tough position for the Democrats to sustain in their, you know, in their sense of how they're going to make it work. Secondly, one of the things that, you know, anybody who looks at the healthcare policy and various types of reforms over the years realize it's very hard to make a reform that helps everybody, right? There's inevitably going to be some sort of downside because you want to have a circumstance in which you want people who are healthy and who don't need much healthcare will buy insurance even though they think they don't really need it. And if they're in good health, maybe they don't really need it. So they're paying something to get all, you know, little or nothing in return. But that money gets used to cover people who are really sick, need a lot of care, and can't afford it. The problem is the president, in order to pass this thing, had to say it's all upside. It's all good. Nothing is going to, you know. And as a result of that, he had to say there are no taxes involved. And, of course, it raised taxes. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan, which obviously you're saying you can't. It said that premiums would go down $2,500 for the average family. That's clearly not the case. And in fact, a lot of people are seeing much higher premiums. The problem with the uninsured back before Obamacare was two problems. One was people who genuinely needed insurance and didn't have it, and they were genuinely suffering. And everybody who was compassionate wanted to help these people. But the other problem were young people who didn't have it, couldn't afford it, didn't see it as something they needed. And by and large, a good chunk of them really didn't need it. That, you know, if you're in good health, you don't necessarily need to have health insurance. It's nice to have it. It's good to have it. Lots of people would tell you, first starting off in life, your first job may not offer you health insurance, or it may offer you at a price you don't want to afford. And those folks can go without insurance for a couple of years and be okay. Those folks are all going to have to be punished under the system. And that's something that Obama never really wanted to acknowledge in all this. And now the rent is coming due. Now the consequences are clear. And I think you're going to see a lot more stories like the one on ABC, because when somebody gets the letter saying that your insurance is canceled, they may have loved their previous insurance. They may have not loved their previous insurance, but they had it. You know, it was one of those things where people don't like having to spend a lot of time thinking about health insurance. If you got it through your employer, great, take care of it. I don't want to have to deal with all the paperwork. I don't have to make very complicated decisions of do I want to pay more now and then pay later with a higher deductible and all these other factors. Now everyone in America has to think about this. And maybe that's one of the things, you know, you see Obama's poll numbers drooping. Of all the things he's done to this country, maybe the one that will hit home the most is that he's made everyone deal with health insurance when it's an issue they'd much rather not deal with at all.
On to martini number two now. And Jim, I'm guessing since it only happened a few days ago, you remember when Nancy Pelosi said there wasn't any money left to cut. There's absolutely no more cuts to make. And to suggest otherwise was just not being responsible. on the part of Republicans. Well, apparently they found $300 million in the loose change under the couch cushions, because that's how much, roughly, Washington is sending in aid for Detroit. $150 million for blight removal and redevelopment, including $65 million in community development block grant money and a $25 million public-private partnership to demolish unused commercial structures. $100 million in federal transit grants, including the immediate release of $24 million for bus repairs and security cameras. $10 million for affordable housing funds, $25 million to hire firefighters. This is just throwing good money after really, really bad money.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just left wondering, like, what is this going to change on the ground in Detroit? One of the things that we, you know, when discussing the bankruptcy of Detroit, we had said that the one good thing about a crisis is it's going to force the city to make a difference. I think they were $17-18 billion in debt. Was that the number?
Yeah.
It was a number that seems really modest when you think of the federal national debt, closer to $17 trillion. But for a city, that's a lot of money. And the important thing is that they have no real good way of raising that money. It's not that the city isn't big spending, but they've managed to cut spending and all the important stuff like ambulances and fire services and police services and all the things that people think a city government really ought to provide. So you have this circumstance in which the city is basically, one option was having to sell off the art in the art museum. You know, you're going to have to recognize that your current structure of doing business, your current way of spending money, your entire approach to government can't work. You're going to have to change. How do you want to change it? And now here comes Uncle Sam to say, no, keep doing what you're doing. We'll give you a big pile of money to help take care of you. And obviously, I think they'll burn through that $300 million pretty darn fast. I don't think the impact on lives of the average folks in Detroit is going to, they're going to feel it very much. And it's just going to end up going floosh down with all the other money that's been spent in Detroit in recent years. Even if you're able to wipe the slate clean of the $17 billion in debt that the city has, you would still end up in a circumstance in which they have the exact same policies in place, the exact same lawmakers in place, the exact same lousy city services, the exact same high crime, the exact same failing schools. All the problems are still there. And so the finances of Detroit will get better when the problems get solved and people want to live there and people want to start businesses there and people want to pay taxes there. People want to, you know, be a part of that community instead of the, you know, increasingly urban dystopian that it is decaying and deteriorating into.
Good luck with this strategy. It's been tried.
I bring many cheery ends to my points today, or don't I?
You're making everyone even more eager for the weekend here, and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot more cheeriness coming out of the third martini. The Obama administration is in full PR mode as we get closer and closer to the end of the month and the end of the fiscal year, trying to pin the blame for the fiscal standoff on Republicans. Dan Pfeiffer, communications director at the White House, was a guest of Jake Tapper on CNN yesterday. Jake Tapper, at the start here, you'll see a Bloomberg poll that he won't reference the exact numbers in. It's 61% believe that the debt ceiling is a good time to negotiate spending cuts. Only 28% want no negotiations and essentially what's called a clean debt ceiling hike by the administration. So here's Tapper, and he gets the response from Dan Pfeiffer.
A new Bloomberg News poll indicating that the American people support, by a 2-to-1 margin, its right to require spending cuts when negotiating the debt ceiling. I understand that Keystone and other provisions that the Republicans are talking about attaching to the debt ceiling are not related, but why not cut some spending?
The Republicans, we are for cutting spending, we're for reforming our tax code, we're for reforming our entitlements. What we're not for is negotiating with people who have a bomb strapped to their chest. We're not going to do that. So if they want to have a discussion about how we reduce our deficits, how we help the middle class, how we give them a better bargain, lift the debt ceiling, take the full faith and credit of the United States off the table, and let's have a discussion.
And then there was this.
Do you acknowledge that President Obama bears any of the responsibility for this crisis in Washington right now, or do you really view it that the House Republicans are entirely responsible?
I believe the House Republicans are entirely responsible.
100%.
Yes, absolutely.
So there you go, Jim. The guy accusing the opponents of having a bomb strapped to their chest is the reasonable side of this debate.
When this came over, you know, late afternoon yesterday, and first of all, I'm a little disappointed in Jake Tapper. I'm a big fan of Jake Tapper. I really kind of wish he had kind of said, you know, he had some good questions in there, but I wish he, you know, kind of called out Pfeiffer on comparing his opponents to suicide bombers. You know, the left used to get really, you know, complain about the politicization of the war on terror and the exploitation of 9/11 and stuff like that. I don't understand why comparing your opponent to a suicide bomber is suddenly now no big deal, perfectly cool. It must be part of that new tone we heard about after Tucson, right, Greg?
Right.
The more gentle and respectful tone we were going to take in Washington. And then the second thing was negotiating with the person with the bomb strapped to their chest. It goes well with the hostage-taking word, which the president used back in the first term, and you're hearing more and more from this administration. Somewhere along the line, hostage-taking became an acceptable synonym for a person who won't give me exactly what I want when I want it. Back in the real world, those two things are not the same thing. Someone who will not give you what you want is someone you're negotiating with. That's what you do. You notice that on Obamacare, on Syria, on the debt ceiling fight, you notice the administration's approach is always, well, we're going to take this to the people. We're going to go out and we're going to stir people up and we're going to hold campaign-style rallies and we'll get that'll put enough pressure on Congress that the other opposition in Congress will have to give up its position. It'll have to make concessions and they'll come to the position we want. Not that different from Ted Cruz's approach to this. And in both of these cases, it means going out and talking to the public at large as opposed to talking to the opposite side, the person on the other side of the table in Washington. And unsurprisingly, it's not successful. Ted Cruz was not able to get enough pressure on enough Democratic senators to get them to pass a budget that would repeal Obamacare. And no matter how much he tried, he was never going to be able to persuade President Obama to sign a bill effectively defunding and eliminating Obamacare. The president is now doing the same thing. And I guess the thing is, if you ratchet up the rhetoric enough, people will be persuaded. I don't think that's the case at all. And I think actually Pfeiffer probably did more damage to his boss than helping him by making that comparison. But I don't know, maybe it's, good for organizing for action donations and stuff like that to insist that, Republicans have a bomb strapped to their chest. What once was considered really unthinkable, over-the-top, and outrageous rhetoric has become really kind of commonplace in Washington, and from members of the administration, and it's kind of galling, but I guess it's just something we're going to put up with for the next 3 years or so, aren't we, Greg?
Happy weekend, everyone!
Yeah, I close on a sour note for all of these, but I guess we could all get, how dare Dan fight, but that's who he is, I mean, somebody put it to me yesterday. We know that the Obama administration isn't really think of Republicans as guys strapped to bombs with their chest, because the administration is always a lot more eager to negotiate with people with bombs, with actual bombs on their actual chests.
Oh, yeah, that's what they're doing in Syria. And the people,
I was going to say, the Syrian rebel, he would send them money then probably.
That's right. And the people who are supposedly reasonable, the ones who announced way ahead of time, they're not going to negotiate. So the idea that they want to have the conversation is just insane. So, Jim, we'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And we'll see you on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.